F2A. Number 7A.
So we did the Christianity vertical, and perhaps I just go quickly over it in a sense of tonality to feel what is happening there. That third triad is showing us that there is a new view on man, that what Paul brought taught was completely different than the Old Testament. He said, you are not a mortal, you are an immortal. You are a perfect man. But naturally, to bring such a big idea into the consciousness of the Jewish Christian churches, he had to explain it step by step. And he explained it first through Colossians and said, look here, the fact is, or the thesis is, that you have, that I bring you a new doctrine, the doctrine of the Christ, which says that you are already the Son of God. You are the reflection of God, and therefore you are perfect. That's Colossians. In 1 Thessalonians, he says, and if you claim that you are the Son of God, you will see that brings you a higher humanhood, that raises your standard even in the human. And if you stick to that Colossians that has in 1 Thessalonians a resurrecting activity and result, if you stick to that through hell and high water, then you will see that you are lifted right out of the Son of Perdition, that frees you entirely from the mortal, and you will see that the Christ dwells in you, that you are a new man, namely the Christ man. What is that Christ man? And so John came along with his three epistles and was explaining, you know, the Christ man is actually a consciousness that is cultured in the calculus of being. That consciousness which can reason in the world as the ordered way of life or as the order of the 7 days of creation, that consciousness translates itself as the Christ to every situation in your experience, and therefore brings, as Christianity brings the Christ into you and dwells in you. And that is the point where, at the point of science, you begin to understand what really the science of man is. And so he builds the bridge over to the fourth column. John, by introducing that there is actually not a mortal man that is made heavenly, but that there is not such a thing as a mortal, not such a thing as the man of sin and the man of perdition, but that there is only a spiritual calculus at work, that then, therefore he says, you see, the purpose therefore of man is not to heal himself, but the purpose of man is to see that he has to stick to the signs of man, that he has to be an exemplar of the signs of man, that he has a great responsibility, namely, to keep the signs of man pure. And in this way, the pastoral epistles begin with that great sense of keeping the teachings of Jesus Christ pure. And so we come to the last vertical, the vertical of science, still under the Christianity matrix, naturally, which says, first, in the pastoral epistles, what? The vertical is that we see that it is science of man. The science of man has what purpose, we said, we've put in there? To keep man from falling. See, the purpose of the science of man is that I do not make mistakes. The purpose of mathematics is not to correct mistakes. The purpose of mathematics is to calculate always rightly without any mistake, to keep mathematics pure and therefore not to mix it up with mistakes. So here in this last column we see that expressed in a wonderful way, that all the four there are showing us, you know, the purpose of your life is that you keep the signs of man pure. How? Now, the first horizontal shows, first of all, that you have to accept that very statement, that you are an exemplar, that you are a model of the new doctrine. Instead of being a model Jew, he is writing to Timothy and Titus and say, I send you as teachers to these various churches. You must be a model Christian scientist, more or less. You must be a model of the new doctrine. You must show forth through your life that you are really representing the signs of men. And that is the pith of the pastoral epistles. That's why we can take the pastoral epistle together, those three, the first letter to Timothy, the second letter to Timothy, and then the letter to Titus. Paul was in Rome. He hoped that he could follow soon afterwards, which then he couldn't do anymore. So he sent Timothy and Titus a so-called manual how to behave, that they are showing forth in their lives as exemplars of the new doctrines, the rules and the ways of behavior. So it is a very good manual, so to say, for every Christian scientist. What makes a Christian scientist? This is the main point, if I go a little bit more into details, because it seems that those three letters especially would be good for us who are now in the work in this new idea and who are in the open and represent in the public this idea, that we see that Paul gives some very good advices how to exemplify the new doctrine. So the main theme in the pastoral epistle, as I said, is that it is a demand to those teachers that to keep the doctrine of Christ's teaching pure, so that they do not deviate either in teaching, in theory, nor in practice from the pure teaching of the Christ. They were sent there, so to say, as the embodiment of the true doctrine. They had to represent the new doctrine. And therefore, they are no more the Son of God, as they were Paul was teaching them in the Christianity vertical, but in the science vertical, they are now the sons of the faith, or the son in the faith, in the doctrine. And representing, therefore, the idea of science, or the idea of the new doctrine at that time, and therefore they had to embody the scientific Christianity. So in these few terms, I think I could depict what the pastoral epistles want to say. So it's no more so much, I repeat it again, to say, see or understand that you are the son sons of God, but that you are the son of science, that you are representing science. It's true that Paul was writing to Timothy and said, O man of God. So again, he could see he was a man of God, and then he shows him that that God is a science, is a doctrine, and that he has to be the man of faith. Man is the son of faith. He is faithful, he says, to the sound doctrine. Can you see now, it's no more faith to God or to the Christ. In the first column, you constantly had faith in God. In the second column, constantly faith in Christ. Now, in the fourth column for science, he always says, have faith in the doctrine, in the science. Doctrine just was standing at that time for the term science of today. So be firm in that doctrine and teach no other doctrine. Don't deviate from the pure teaching. This is naturally something that we have to teach ourselves too, that we are very careful not to deviate from the pure teaching of the science of being. Now, this is not always easy, but we can, so to say, watch that by always going back to the textbook or to the Bible and say, well, what I teach, is that really in the textbook? Do I teach what is in the textbook? The textbook for us is the book of Revelation, is a revelation. It's the only textbook. And if we can't more or less prove everything through the textbook, we are already treading on uncertain ground. Though, as we will see next week, naturally the textbook cannot give the full answer in 600 pages, cannot give the full answer to every question, and cannot not even say how that textbook will evolve, how the teaching will evolve, how the insight into the structure of that textbook will evolve, but still it's there. It's only to be seen in a fresh light. So Paul is telling Timothy, exercise yourself in the godly doctrine and teach the doctrine which is after godliness. Can you see he was constantly hammering in the doctrine, the doctrine, the doctrine. Said, teach only the doctrine. Be careful that you don't deviate. We know how easy it is that one deviates. Every teaching, every spiritual teaching is always in danger of being adulterated. Everyone. And you have seen that in the life, in the short span of Mrs. Eddy's life, how her students were deviating from it, that they were deviating in the teaching, in the healing process, like Kennedy suddenly deviated from metaphysics into mesmerism. You know how the students of Mrs. Eddy opened up their own churches, their own periodicals, their own classes, how many branches were, or how many new branches were came into existence, like New Thought, and all that was all a sideline, a deviation, an adulteration, a watering down, so to say, of Mrs. Eddy's teaching. And we have to be careful that we don't water down what John Dolly has given us as a foundation in science, and that we keep that pure. That's also our job. So keep the doctrine of Christ pure. Keep the commandment without spot, unrebukable. Avoid profane and vain babblings. Nice wording. Avoid oppositions of sciences falsely so-called. You see, don't mix it up with so-called sciences and say Christian science is the same as other so-called sciences. And that's something that we see more and more. The more in the world people are interested in spiritual things, in mental things, psychological things, if one is not careful, and the students can hardly distinguish between Christian science and then perhaps the modern trends in psychology or in mentalism. And so again, we have to be on our toes, that we don't mix it, that we don't water down our vision and keep it pure. He said, God wants all men to be saved and to come unto the knowledge of truth. Continue in the doctrine and begin at home. Piety begins at home. Show that you put first your own house in order before you tell other people how to put their house into order. Can you hear somehow from these few renderings how he's very much engaged in seeing that the purpose of man is not to demonstrate actually his manhood, but that he is actually engaged in demonstrating that there is a science lying behind man and the universe, and that we have to demonstrate that science of man. And it's interesting that Mrs. Eddy started out with the first publication as a science of man before she published Science and Health. So she took up, and she said so often that she picked up the idea where Paul left it. And here we have some kind of a bridge from Paul to the textbook, or to the beginning of the textbook, to the signs of men. In the second letter to Timothy, he encourages him to stand firm and prove himself worthy of the doctrine. So in the first letter, he more or less first told him that he should live in accordance to the new doctrine. He knew that Timothy was meeting great resistance. You can understand that, as the ambassador, so to say, from Paul, who was in prison in Rome. He came to this church, and naturally nobody wanted to accept him so easily. They said, "Let Paul come. He's our big boss. He's our big teacher. We don't like a second generation of it. We like to have it from the horse's mouth." And so he naturally met with a lot of opposition. So Paul had to back him up and say, "Be faithful in what you do, stand firm, and the only thing you can do is to prove yourself worthy. Then the opposition will fall. Then you have the strength to resist all the attacks." And that is naturally what everyone who is young and who comes for the first time in the field of teaching, he has to meet. Every one of them will meet with opposition. Why is he coming? What has he to tell us? We want to go to the source of everything and make the teaching much more personal than what it really should be. As we can see that mostly the big truths are spoken out of the mouths of babes, and we must see that age is not a sign of maturity, that age is not a sign of intellectual insight, of spiritual insight. It can come to anyone. On the contrary, we should actually see, and we have the proof of it in every science and also in spiritual science, that great new ideas always came from young people when they were young. They made the go when they were young. Einstein was very, very young when he had the insight into the theory of relativity, and there are books and books about it. Jesus was young. John Dolly was very young. As far as I know, he was since then the youngest teacher that they have ever made, the youngest lecturer that they have ever made. There is something very good in the young thought that is willing to accept thought. So we should never look at the age and say, "Well, Max is now an old man. He has a lot of experience, and he has 50 years of experience and teaching behind himself, so he must be the big shot." That's no proof of it. I hope that is no proof of it, and I hope very much that a younger generation can take on where I leave it and don't have first to get to my old age. I don't look like that, but I'm not feeling that way. But still, here it is. Timothy was young, Titus was young, and they met that opposition. So he said, "Well, you prove yourself by what you are. That's your certificate, which you can show what you are." To Titus, he was also writing, because he sent Titus, I think, to Ephesus, if I'm right. In these historical things, I'm not always quite right. No, it was not right. He sent them to Crete, sent him to Crete, to another church there. And here he gives him also advice and says, "Well, Titus, you have to exemplify the signs of men and show," this is the additional sense, "and show that if you yourself live that science, then this is the way how to spread it universally. It will have a wide effect. It will have a ripple effect. It will affect the whole surroundings of you. You will teach by living the doctrine. By living the doctrine, not by teaching verbally the doctrine, you can teach the new faith. And so stand firm and prove yourself worthy. And to Titus, he said that he should be an exemplar for the new faith. Preach by example, so to say, he said to Titus. That's the way to teach. We like to teach through words and through books and through writings and through tapes and videotapes and so on. There are many others that teach through their lives. What their lives are is a good way of teaching. And then he says to Titus, and this will have a saving effect on men in the whole universe. That's his additional remark. So here we have these three pastoral epistles, all teaching more or less the same thing, that they should embody the doctrine, that they should prove themselves worthy in the doctrine, and not let the doctrine down, and to Titus, that if he exemplifies that doctrine, it tells him that will have a saving effect. Yes, that's the pastoral epistles. And we can see something in it that always made an impression on me, which I also would like to pick up here, though it is a detail. But in these three pastoral epistles, he more or less entrusts those two ambassadors with the idea that says, look here, whatever you do, first of all, think of the idea of science, of the new doctrine, not of yourself. See that the idea is kept pure. See that the idea is not hurt by what you do. It doesn't matter if you are hurt. That doesn't matter. But behave yourself so that the idea is not hurt. Which means, in our practical life terms, means we should always see that we are not letting the idea of science down. Rather take it on us that we are unjustly criticized or that we are unjustly treated, but never allow the idea of science to be misrepresented, to put any blame on the idea of science. To let the idea of science be stand out in its purity. Protect the idea of science in the first place. Don't protect yourself in the first place. Protect the purity and the dignity of the idea of science in its first place. So when we speak and act, always on the first preference should be to keep the idea of science pure, so that it has dignity and can keep up that dignity. Yes. Then the text goes further and comes to that wonderful, beautiful little letter that Paul wrote to a rich man called Philemon. It's a touching story and a very practical story. We have Philemon, that means, translated in English, means loving. And Philemon was a rich and respectable member in the church in Colossae. And apparently he had a slave called Onesimus. And that Onesimus must have done something wrong and does not know what. He has stolen some money, and he ran away from the master, which was not allowed to do for a slave. And he took the pain to travel from Colossae, which is in modern-day Turkey, and took the pain to travel to Rome. That must not have been easy for a slave, to find his way from there to Rome, and went to see Paul and serve Paul in prison. And therefore, because he was serving Paul, he called him Philemon, which means useful, profitable. And he sent Onesimus back to Philemon with a letter begging Philemon to free Onesimus, to set him free as a slave, no matter what he has done. So he didn't send Onesimus back and say, you go and pay back what you have stolen, or you make good for what you have done wrong. He sent him back and said to Philemon, set him free. My son Onesimus, whom I have begotten in my bonds. He has given Onesimus, so to say, a new birth. And the new birth is always to set men free. And Paul could see that everybody is free, that man is born free. Though at that time he accepted the classification of master and slave, and usually was teaching the slaves that they should be better slaves than other slaves. He didn't say rebel against the master and make a little revolution and set yourself free. He said, no, first try to be a better man. A better slave. Just as Jesus first was a good carpenter before he could be the glorified. So at that point, he could see that man, the man of science, is always free. See, now at this point, he was no more regarding him as a slave. So claim, he says, the horizontal here is claim your faith. For what? Because it resurrects you. So he's, for the first time, he told a slave, though he had done something wrong, said, no matter what you have ever done in your life, because Paul knew very well that he himself, as Saul, has done many bad things in his life, but that from one moment to the next he could set himself free. And so he told the same thing to Philemon and to Onesimus and said, you are freeborn. Man is freeborn. You are not the slave of passion. You are not the slave of your race. You are not the slave of your color of your skin. You are not the slave of your family. You are not the slave of hereditary beliefs. You are not the slave of your five physical senses. You are not the slave of hate and jealousy. You are not slave of your character. You are not the slave of your idiosyncrasy in your character. You are set free. As the man of science, you are set free. And you are free men. And so that's the story here of Onesimus and what happened afterwards, we do not know. But instruction of Paul is clear. Claim that you are free born. Claim your sonship as a free born man.